Do you pray to the gods?
The old and the new.
There is only one god, and his name is Death. And there is only one thing we say to Death. Not today.
SpecFicMedia.com presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast with hosts E.G. Holyfield, Christiana Ellis, Chooch, Viv, and Nuchus.
Viv has lost it. And Chooch can't even make noise.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 7. Is it episode 7 or 6? What are we on?
7.
6.
6.
Of Beyond the Wall. This is a podcast in association with SpecFicMedia.com. And I got confused by the episode number because one of us here has seen episode 7.
Woohoo! It's me!
Christiana, the spoiled.
Christiana, she's going to get confused.
That's right.
We're going to be talking about Roz, and she's going to be like, oh, I know what she did in episode 7. And then we'll have to shoot her.
Yeah. Basically, episode 7 is like the best episode ever.
Of course.
Everybody else gets to watch it, at which point it becomes... You know, it's okay.
That's because it's Roz porn, isn't it?
It's whatever you want the most.
Well, I have my theory about Roz, which I'll get to in a little while.
I have a theory about Roz also. I think we should hold that and maybe do a survey.
Ra's al Ghul trained Batman.
If you make yourself more than just a man, if you devote yourself to an ideal, and if they can't stop you, then you become something else entirely.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense now.
We're gonna do a survey because I want to talk about it now, because I think if it is true, then it probably already showed up in episode 7. So anyway. So episode 6, what was the name of the episode, Nutty? Because I know you know.
The Golden Crown.
Well, I don't look at the names of the episodes. So yeah,
Sneer.
Golden Crown, that made sense.
They're all very cute.
Yes, I had an email from a friend of mine who I went to college with, who's like one of the smartest people I know. And he says, so do you think that someone that had molten gold poured on their head, do you think they would die that fast? I'm like,
I sure hope so.
I saw a big internet debate.
I really would hope so. I would not want to be walking around with that.
I think the shock would kill you.
I thought the claim was funny.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about, like, when people get a fever, right? I mean, if they get a fever above, 104, that can cause brain damage pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Once it starts getting high. And so even from the outside, molten gold covering your skull would overheat your brain really fast.
I don't even think it would be that as much as probably a lot of it went into his brain.
Yeah.
So I would think
it could have even
go right through his scalp and skull.
That could happen too.
You know, I thought the scene was really awesome to watch, but now that we're describing how he actually died, I'm getting a little queasy.
Awful way to die, even for Viserys.
Yeah.
I mean,
once PG said the gold went in his brain, I'm like, ooh, dinner.
that was cool, because I was watching it with my friend who hasn't read the books, Matt, who is writing the episode summaries from the point of view
awesome.
Of a noob. Yes, he is so happy that he now has a nemesis. So
my local friends up here in Nova Scotia are reading the blog, and they told me last night how much they enjoy his posts, by the way.
Awesome. I will pass.
So they may not comment, but people are reading.
That's awesome. I'm covering my eyes almost because I know it's coming, and he's like, just very happy because he's been waiting for Viserys to die since.
So he sensed that Viserys was going to die before it was obvious, because for a minute there, Viserys was thrilled.
He was.
Did you see it coming?
He pretty much figures, once he put the sword to Danny's stomach. He pretty much knew all bets were off with the Khal Drogo. So,
yeah.
What's he saying?
He says yes. You shall have
golden crown that men shall tremble to behold.
Well, that was all I wanted. What was promised?
Working in the background, so I'm just going to put her in the bedroom. So I just wanted to, yeah.
But we love the dire wolves.
Well, I can let her keep barking if you want.
No. But, yeah, so, yeah, we went right to the end. So that was great, of course, name of the episode. And we got one death that we were all hoping for, especially those that hadn't read the book. And they were all just, why does he not die?
Right. Why do they put up with
it? It was so cool looking. And the way that the scene played out was, it was so amazing. I totally squeed.
Yep. And her line at the end was perfect. Mm-hmm. Good way to end the episode where, you know, she says he was no dragon.
Fire. He was no dragon. Fire cannot kill a dragon.
So jumping back to the beginning.
Back now.
Did you make the Harry Potter connection at the beginning of the episode?
With Osha?
Yes.
Yes. Not in the first scene, but several scenes in, we have the wildling attack on Bran, where they come upon him, and at first they just, you know, want horse and you know, whatever silver he has on him. Then I think it's Osha that realizes, oh, he's, you know, well, I guess he says that he's a Stark, and then mm-hmm. she realizes, ooh, hostage. But yes, Natalia, I don't know if it's Tena or Tenya or Tina. I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but she plays Nymphadoris Tonks in the Harry Potter movies. And
really, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. She looked a little familiar.
Yeah, I did not know that until I saw her face, and I was like, "Ooh, I know her." And
she didn't get a whole lot of screen time.
No. But she's got a very distinctive face.
And she's really dirty.
Yeah, she is very dirty. My kids. I was on the website pulling some screenshots for, you know, web posts and stuff, and they had the picture of Osha up there with her hair like pointing straight up in the air, and they're like, who's that guy and why is he so dirty?
Oh, I loved the hair. I think it's going to be the new Rachel.
There you go.
I say we all sport it this weekend.
Yeah, I'm just
now, think I have enough gel.
My hair can do that really easily. Basically, all I have to do is take a shower, not put any product of it on it at all, and then go to bed. And I'll wake up looking like that.
Yeah, I have a similar condition.
Yeah, I did realize that I did not introduce anybody today. So, you know, if this is your first episode listening, check the show notes because, you know, I'm not calling back. For everybody, since we're doing everything out of order today, this weekend is Balticon, which is a great science fiction fantasy writer centric convention outside of Baltimore, and all of us here will be there, and we'll be doing some recording there. Hopefully I will definitely be playing at least one Game of Thrones centric game and doing some recording, so maybe we can get some audio that will appear in later, you know, special edition episodes. We go back though to the beginning of the episode because we did have a good scene, great scene, someone who remembers the books better than I know a lot of the lines were from the book, but was the scene, I don't remember the scene where Robert slaps her being in his chamber like that. I thought it was more of a public setting.
I believe that it's almost the same scene, but they didn't come to Ned's chamber. They summoned him. That's and I think that's the only difference.
Yeah. That sounds right to me. I think many of the lines were very similar though. I definitely remember the, she says, I'll wear it like a badge of honor. And, and he says, well, wear it in silence or I'll honor you again.
Yes.
Biatch.
And my favorite line, just the way he said it, because I think Robert Mark Addy has increasingly done a better job like he hasn't been great the whole time. But as far as giving him lines to really sell. Just the line where he says, you know, I shouldn't have done that.
I should not have hit her. That was not kingly.
Just the way he said that, and I loved it. But he has a couple better there when he's alone with Ned, where he talks about, you know, of course he says, I'm the king, I get what I want. But then he gets all soft where he talks about you were the brother I chose, which...
I never loved my brothers. Sad thing for a man to admit, but it's true. You were the brother I chose.
Sort of was the, I think, we'll talk about later, where Ned is, you know, sitting on the throne, really being the hand and actually, you know, using the power that he has. Had a discussion on the phone with a friend of mine talking about he didn't feel that scene, getting ahead, but who cares? We're jumping around tonight. Where Ned, you know, at first, you know, the obvious thing, ordering Beric Dondarrion to go after the mountain, you know, that made sense. Right. But then going that step further to say, okay, we're going to get Tywin here to answer for all this. My friend who hasn't read the books, he's like, you know, that just didn't make sense that he would do that. And part of that scene, the first scene, was Ned and Robert. Ned finally, I think it finally sunk into him on that, in that scene, that Robert is never going to face the truth.
Right.
You know, he's like, I don't know what's going on between you and Jamie. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you're reading the books, even you're like, why don't you two just talk about this? So Robert knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were alone. Yeah. They were right there.
Right. But, you know, that, you know, Ned realizing he's not going to face the truth unless there's no other option, that he has to face the truth. That sort of led into him saying, okay, well, I'm going to get Tywin here so that Robert has to face the truth. We're going to, you know, I'm going to lay it down in front of him, and, you know, he's going to have to make a decision about all this. So I thought it did make sense to me that he would take that step during the scene where he's, you know, being the hand. So,
right.
And one might think, you know, what the ultimate boneheaded maneuver by Robert is, you know, taking off for a hunt, leaving Ned when he's all busted up and pissed off, and leave him in complete charge of everything, is just like, you know, not a very smart move as far as keeping the peace. But I think it may show how much he's counting on Ned's honor and his respect for him, that, oh, well, he wouldn't do anything hot-headed.
Well, or he expects him to do exactly what Ned will do, which is to honorably handle things in a way that Robert just doesn't care enough or doesn't have enough energy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like probably it was under John Arryn.
Go ahead, Christiana.
So I think that's just the thing with Ned's whole character, is that even when he is doing something that could be considered a little, you know, I mean, it was pretty bold for him to, you know, send a knight after, you know, Gregor Clegane.
Yeah.
But and then to also summon Tywin. But we know that Ned is the sort of guy who is going to make sure that everything he's doing is legal.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, right. So he's not going to pull a Jaime Lannister and stab someone in the street.
Yeah.
He's going to send a formal, you know, letter to say, you are hereby summoned.
Right.
And then if he shows up, then he's going to say, you know, what is the meaning of this? And Tywin will say, whatever.
Pretty much.
And then nothing will happen. And so that's kind of, I think, what Robert's thinking is that I think it's a little bit of magical thinking from Robert. I think he wants the dispute to just go away.
Right.
And so he kind of thinks that by ordering it to go away and then leaving, that will make it happen. Right. Like, if I don't see you continuing to fight, it's not really happening.
Yeah. Nutty, do you have something to say?
Well, I think that Robert just, he doesn't care about ruling. And this just goes to show even more how that is. You know, I mean, so many times he'll do as much as he can and then he just gives up, you know, with the in the tent with the direwolves. He made his rulings and then he's like, okay, whatever, you guys do whatever you're going to do. He really doesn't care. And he keeps saying winning a crown was easier than ruling it. And he has such distaste for ruling that I don't think he really cares what's going on. As long as he doesn't have to deal with anything, you know, he's going, yeah. There's all these problems. I'm going on a hunt. Why? Because hopefully you guys will take care of it and it'll be, I won't have to deal with it when it comes back. He's just avoiding the problems. And that's my feeling about Robert, books right. and series.
Yeah, I mean, I get the feeling that not that he doesn't care, but that he almost fears it. I mean, like he says, I want to go on a hunt because killing things clears my head, yeah. you know, of all this stuff. He's scared to face the truth of what's going on. So,
well, I mean,
and Viv, thoughts?
Well, I would say that when the whole thing started, when the rebellion started and they started, you know, warring against the Targaryens, it was a mighty adventure. It was heroic and it was swashbuckling and it was, you know, taking the land back from those crazy people. And then all of a sudden, it's over. And he's actually expected to reign this kingdom that he's been fighting and doing all of that fun stuff that he probably really loved and didn't know what he was getting into and then just has abstained pretty much by relying on whatever hand is handy to handle the dirty work for him.
Yep. Well, and I love that as he storms out, you know, or, you know, he throws the hand emblem back and says, you know, to keep this on or I'll pin the damn thing on Jaime Lannister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the ultimate threat.
Yeah.
Oh, and I found it interesting. We, for whatever reason, we had, we had showed our son the first episode because he'd seen some of the newer episodes, but hadn't seen the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because in the last episode, there was Cersei and Ned were talking and, oh no, I'm sorry. The last episode, Cersei and Robert was talking,
mm-hmm.
and Robert's saying, you probably want me to give it to Jaime, and she's saying, no, Jaime's not serious enough. He wouldn't mm-hmm. take it.
Right.
And I'd totally forgotten about, like, the first scene we ever see them in together
mm-hmm.
is when they're looking over the corpse of Jon Arryn, and mm-hmm. she says, you should be hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, who would want that?
Yeah.
Even, I found that interesting.
Even funnier was his reaction to brother and sister having fun together because you don't really see that. I mean, the look on his face was hilarious. Yeah.
Jumping around again, since we're doing that so well tonight, one of the things that I really loved about the episode is that you had the whole idea of honor. Playing itself out. Of course, honor has been one of the big themes of the whole show.
Mm.
But in this episode, you know, you've got, you know, Ned hoping that Robert will, you know, display the honor he feels that his king has or could have. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got Renly going off on Robert during the hunt where, you know, all Robert wants to talk about is, you know, how great things were when there was battles and, you know, the
making the eight.
Yes, making the eight. And,
HBO sells that T-shirt now, by the way.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. And, you know, you've got the other pieces of honor in the show. You've got Ser Vardis, who fights with honor when he's fighting Bronn, who, you know, mm-hmm. is the sellsword and has no honor, but he wins because, you know, sometimes honor is restricting.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just a really good just illustration of the show and the story's take on that, which is, yes, it's all fine and good, especially, you know, when we see Ned being so honorable and always wanting to do the right thing. But then again, we also see Bronn has just slit Vardis's throat, And I did like that little moment where he sort of looks to Lisa like, you want me to spare him? And she doesn't say anything, so he doesn't. Then drops him through the moon door. And then she's like, you don't fight with honor. And he's like, no.
You don't fight with honor.
No.
You know, he did. Honor's all fine and good, but sometimes... You know, you can be honorable and dead or not honorable and alive, and that's the choice.
Yeah.
Right. And we had another example of honor and also the idea of making characters seem weak just for the purpose of getting an arc that you might not even need, because you've got, Theon pretty much just scolding Rob about, you know, you need to defend your family's honor. And I thought Rob just appeared weak in that, you know, that scene.
Yeah.
You know, he, just the way he was reacting to Theon, and Theon, they keep sort of changing how Theon's being shown in different ways. And, his family, you know, being the warriors and instigators of things. So that makes sense that he's, he's trying to prod Rob into defending the Stark honor and fighting back against the Lannisters. Mm-hmm. But,
I disagree just a little bit with that version of the scene, because I felt like when we have Theon and Rob arguing there, it's more like they're both kind of wrong, because as far as what Theon's doing, it reminded me of in Do the Right Thing, where this guy walking by accidentally steps on the character named Buggin' Out, accidentally steps on his sneakers and makes this little scuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so Buggin' Out is, you know, enraged. And he's got all these guys nearby him saying, you're going to let him get away with that? Man, those shoes are ruined. What are you going to do about it? And I felt like that's what Theon was doing here, is that, yes, it's a very real problem. But for Theon at this point to say, yes, you need to lead your army against the Lannisters is way premature.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Rob was right to say that. But you're also right that Rob is potentially... he's not saying no for the right reason. You know, he's not saying no because he's saying, no, we need to see if we can get some diplomatic results here first. He's saying no because he doesn't want to do anything. He doesn't feel like ready to actually be in charge yet.
Right.
And if nothing else is successful about this episode, I get the opportunity to do a Spike Lee drop in
right on
within the episode. So thank you, Christiana.
You're welcome.
I have to agree with Chris. I have to agree with Christiana to a point also, because, you know, like she said about Theon, you know, he's just egging him on. And it's very easy for Theon to egg Rob on because it's not his house. It's not his brother. Mm-hmm. It's not his family. Mm-hmm. Whereas Theon, I feel, not Theon, sorry, Rob, I feel, is getting the weight of what being a lord is on his shoulders. And he's actually starting to realize it, because in an earlier episode when they're meeting in the Gauzwood, and Rob's all ready, just like Theon, to fight over it. And now that he's the lord and he's watching his brother, you know, prance around on the horse and he's crippled and he sees what he could lose, he realizes that there are consequences to every decision he makes. And he realizes that he can't be too hasty. So I think while he may be saying no for the wrong reasons, I think a lot of it has to do with fear of, you know, just making the wrong decision. I'm a young lord. Am I supposed to do this right now? And I think that's pretty important. Well, also, I kind of felt like the slash writers will have a lot to work with from that scene.
Well, but not only is he a young lord, isn't he in the books like 15?
Yeah, he's like 14 or 15 in the books.
I mean, it's not just that he's never been, you know, in charge of the manor on his own or the realm, his area of the realm. He's a kid, and yes, he's been raised to be lord someday, but he's always had mom and dad there. And he didn't have a crippled brother, and his two of his sisters gone, and You know, I mean, it's just a lot. And I think that it would weigh heavily on anyone, just the family situation, let alone put into it all the, you know, the Game of Thrones going on around him. And I think Theon even, you know, we're definitely getting a lot more depth to him than up to this point. And I can't remember if it was PG or Christiana that said it last time, or maybe it was said multiple times, but that is absolutely true. And you can see how conflicted he is in that he knows he's a ward through war. He knows that he's there as a prisoner to keep the peace, but it's like he wants to be a Stark while he resents the Starks. He wants the honor, but he also wants his freedom. And it's just, it's kind of sad to see things play out where he's trying to be equal to the other nobles and everybody just kind of discounts him because, oh, he's just like a prisoner of war kind of thing. And it's, I think it's a wonderful thing to see when you know what's coming for him. And I'll leave it at that. I think it gives great motivation and depth to what we see later.
Right.
One last note on the end of that. I feel like the way that the whole little mini hostage crisis is resolved kind of, you know, sums all that up again in a practical example of, you know, Theon actually does save the day, but Rob jumps on him for essentially being, you know, premature and reckless.
Right.
And so Theon has a very legitimate point of, you were laying down your sword. The obvious thing for him to do at that point is to go ahead and slash Bran's throat, or worse, just, you know, drop him and go after you first because Bran's not getting away.
Right.
And then kill you because you're now unarmed and he's got two hostages.
Yeah.
Rob does have a point of, did you see how far that arrow came out of this guy's chest? What if Bran's head had been right there?
Wow. Yep. Exactly. I mean, it's one of those choices that you see get played out in a lot of different dramatic roles. And yeah, what she said.
Yeah. Also, wasn't there direwolves in the book in this confrontation? Yeah. I really missed them. Just wanted to say that.
And getting back to my my point earlier about honor appearing several times in the as a theme here. You've got Viserys and Jorah having the discussion about stealing the dragon eggs, and you know Viserys saying, "Oh, you know, does loyalty mean nothing to you?" And you know Jorah says, "Well, loyalty means everything to me." So his view on honor, whether it's you know the fact that he you know respects Danny more than Viserys, which anybody would in this case, or just you know hearkening back to what his view on honor was when it came to you know selling the people into slavery, or you know how he you know did things just to try to please his wife, and may have done dishonorable things. You know, sort of just again hits on the whole idea of honor. And then my favorite version or example of it is during the trial where, you know, Tyrion realizes that he's got Lysa because he knows that even though she's batshit crazy, she has that sense of honor that the Tullys and the Starks have that, you know, and he says, when she says something about the law, and he just looks at her and says, oh, I know the law.
If you're tried and found guilty, then by the king's own laws, you will pay with your life.
I understand the law.
He knew that he had her where he wanted him, even though he didn't quite understand that, you know, they wouldn't wait for Jaime to come.
Mm-hmm. And I luckily, choose my brother Jaime.
And luckily Bronn. And I just love one of my favorite little visual things was just the look on Zervardus's face when he's like scared because he says, oh, Jamie's going to be my champion. But then Lysa says, oh, we're not waiting. This is going to happen today. And he's just like, oh, shoo.
Yeah. My favorite look was Bronn's shrug when he said, I'll stand for the dwarf. And Tyrion looks at him. He was just kind of
It's like, hey, why not?
You know? Ethan, I love Bronn.
I don't really have anything better going on.
Yeah.
either I'll die or I'm going to be rich.
So, yeah. Either way. Meh.
We're going to do this.
So jumping back to the beginning, because there were a couple of things that were very cool and, you know, from the book and or different than from the book. But again, we have another dream, you know, Bran's dream, which seeing the three-eyed crow. I don't think, and this isn't a spoiler, but I think one of the purposes of the dream, which they may mention later, for the person who saw episode 7, maybe she'll know.
But
whole idea of the dream there, which they never really talked about, is that the crow is flying into the underground cemetery of the Starks, and you know, what does that mean? And so we'll see. Maybe we'll actually get to see the youngest Stark make an appearance.
Rickon hasn't showed up since episode 1.
So maybe. He was mentioned, but that's about it.
Yeah.
and then we have you know, him waking up when Hodor brings in the saddle, but then he doesn't say Hodor.
Yeah. I know.
It made me so sad.
Yeah.
I missed that he didn't say it. I kind of wished he had. But at the same time, I acknowledge that the whole gag of him only saying Hodor works way better on the page than it would in the
show.
Also, he had a great smile.
Yeah, it was
very Hodor.
It's a great shot, even if he didn't actually say the word.
No, yeah, and visually, I mean, from whatever, cinematically, it was a great not having him say that, because you got him holding it up, you got Bran coming up in bed and just the beaming smile on his face. So, you know, that from that perspective, it was great. But of course, you want to hear Hodor say Hodor. So. we talked about the wildling attack. But the scene after that, which I'm sure everybody wanted to chime in about, would be the scene where Syrio gets to come in and give another lesson to Arya.
Aww.
Viv, would you like to say anything about that?
I think, obviously, you know, we all heart Syrio and the strength that he gives Arya and the confidence and the self-defense lessons and stuff like that. But I think that it was really cool that they brought him back, because it's like he was the one voice, the one person that she really needed. She probably wanted her mother or John or somebody, but the voice that probably she needed to hear more than anyone else's was Syrio's. And I love the line where, you know, she's fearful about her father's health and she's upset and all this stuff. And she asks about, you know, which God does he honor? And he says, there is only one God and his name is Death.
There is only one God and his name is Death.
And there is only one thing we say to death. Not today.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that kicks
love that.
Ass, yep. You know? I loved it.
It's such a great scene in showing Arya's vulnerability, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It was during this scene on the second watch that my husband and I both agreed that I think her name is Maisie Williams, the young actress.
Yes.
She is going to become someone.
Yeah.
She has definitely got the chops, and she's going to be somebody to watch.
Yep.
And then we also decided that Bran is going to be the next Deco.
I don't know.
That means nothing to me.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Deco?
Oh, okay.
He's known as Deco. Yeah.
I've never heard that.
Looks and great acting ability.
Deco. Must be more of that slash fiction experience that you have.
Or maybe it's a Canadian thing.
Deco.
I've only ever heard him referred to as
the rags on the the magazines when you're going to check out. That's what they call them.
I've never. Really? And I don't buy those rags, but I read the online ones, and I've never heard Deco. I'm out of the loop.
I just read them while I'm waiting on the checkout line.
Sure.
They're so funny.
Well, it was crazy
especially
for me.
The one with that boy.
It was crazy for me last episode. For some reason, I had all of these similar looking celebrity flashes. So, like the first time we saw Sir Loras, all I could think of is he looks like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes, I did have one of the first real having read the book moments, watching the show with someone who hasn't read the book moments, where, you know, Sarah, you just mentioned it, Viv, where, you know, the line is, you know, there's only one thing to say that you say to death, not today. And I said it before he said it. Mm. And my friend Matt looked at me, he was like, oh, that was eerie.
Yeah.
But yeah, you gotta know how Sirio's gonna talk.
Yeah,
just so.
Let's see,
Viserys, and there's certain facial expressions he makes. He looks just like John Stamos.
Yes. He said that, and I was like, creepy, because it was when he was knocked down and he looked up, and but for the yellow hair, he looked just like John Stamos.
So that's who he's looked like to me. That in mind,
it is creepy though, because I didn't see it before he said that. Chooch's allergies are kicking his ass. Sorry, everybody.
No, I'm sorry. We don't have to say a whole lot about the next scene, which would be Danny eating the horse heart, because,
other than
all you need to know.
Khal Drogo was getting turned on.
Oh, yeah.
Why wouldn't he? That was pretty sexy.
Like, yeah, eat that horse heart. My wife.
I got that as like pride.
Yeah, that's what I got too.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm sure he was sporting a Woody, but I think it was more pride on his face.
And I thought for sure she was going to kiss him when he was picking her up and holding her, but
I thought her performance in that scene was incredible. Just her facial expressions conveying like all these different things, the layers of, oh my God, this is really gross, and the layer of, I can't believe that I am here. What is this? Yeah. And then also the layer of, this is important and gods be damned, I'm going to finish this thing.
Yeah, that sheer
dedication.
Yeah.
Staring right at Khal Drogo the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was her focal point. And the look on Viserys' face as he realizes, oh, snap, this baby's going to steal my throne.
Mm-hmm.
When they said it's a son, the way his whole face changes, I was like, oh, that's awesome.
He said it later. He said they gave, you know, more to her in 5 minutes than, or something. What was the line? They gave her more than I've ever gotten, and I'm the dragon or something like that.
It's like love, fear, and respect or something.
How can you rule without money, love, and fear?
Yeah.
They love her.
Just incidentally, you know, no spoilers, but the connection between Daenerys and Drogo, we get a really great scene with that in the next episode.
Ooh.
gave me goosebumps.
Okay, so we're staying up to watch it tonight. getting up early.
So the dragon eggs are mentioned more than once in the episode. You have the scene early on where she's not burned when she's putting the dragon eggs in the in the fire. You've got Viserys trying to steal the eggs, Jorah stopping him.
One brief note, people may have forgotten that in the first episode there was that moment where she went into the bath where, you know, her attendant was saying, no, too hot, and it was like scalding, but she just walked right in like it was fine. Yep. And it was a little, you know, I'm sure that seemed weird to people who kind of didn't know what was going on at the time, but maybe they just sort of wrote it off as, oh, she's like so stunned she doesn't even feel it or something
she's
like that
cleansing.
But so this is a callback to that she is not burned by the heat of this dragon egg, even though her, you know, her handmaiden there is by touching the same egg.
Yeah. Right.
Have we mentioned the name Rhaegar before, by the way?
No.
Because she wants to name her son Rhaegar.
I don't think we have, and she announced it in this episode.
Jorah says that Rhaegar was the last dragon, not your brother.
Yeah, I think they did say that.
So they did say that, but they haven't like really talked about this, the brother too much.
That's our older brother for new people.
And the episode when he is going to steal the eggs, the one thing that kind of bugged me about that is so they're talking about, you know, basically how much these things cost. That, you know, one will buy me a ship, a second one will buy me an army, you know, third one will get, you know, I need a big army. But so it made me think of, you know, the guy who just gave the eggs away. he's that loaded. Like, he could go and...
Well, yes, but he is.
No, it was...
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Christiana.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it was a wedding gift, and we have to remember that one of the big parts is sort of the culture over there is that this Dothraki horde, all 10 of these guys... basically the way they live is by riding around and either ransacking cities or getting paid off not to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so a really extravagant wedding gift is also a, so what do you say? You guys don't pillage my fields for a while.
It's like the mafia. It's like protection money.
Well, and it seemed like, you know,
or like Reavers, you fill them up and maybe they won't come for you.
How in the first episode where Danny was so concerned, you know, we've been here for a year and he's never asked us for anything. And and Avisaris is saying, you know, he knows that, you know, when I take my crown that I'll take care of him or whatever. But, you know, he doesn't seem like he needs much taken care of if he's got that much cash.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's a slave trader, right? And besides that, he's in on the all the intrigue going on.
Mm.
In King's Landing. So he's getting money there. You know, you're not a spy for free.
Yeah. It just seemed and like so, Lannister money.
Well, either way, if he keeps Danny happy, then he can continue to get information about her easier.
Yeah.
After that, we have the scene between Mord and Tyrion, which actually, I don't know if was that the first one where he wakes up almost falling off the...
Mm-hmm. I think we sort of skipped it. If we were going chronologically, we skipped the first one because there was two.
Yes, there was two.
Now gold!
About the gold! Listen to me! Listen to me!
With the absolute great line where he's talking to him and he's like, he tries to reason with him and he says...
Sometimes possession... is an abstract concept.
Like Mord would ever understand half of those words.
Well, and then so, you know, his immediate reaction after that of realizing how dumb that was and just his frustration is like, I can't, it physically hurts me to dumb my speech down this much.
Rich as Lannister.
You're a smart man.
I can't believe I'm having to explain to you how I can pay you even though I don't have money on me right now.
Of course you have. You're a smart man. You know who the Lannisters are. I am a Lannister.
It's not literally in my pocket, but I can still pay you. I can't believe I'm having to explain this.
Well, and then that lovely to jump as I'm wont to do as Tyrion and Bronn are leaving the Eyrie Court and he just tosses the bag of gold to him. And you got to wonder what happened after that door closed. How pissed was the queen? What was that all about? You know?
Oh, and Mord's face of surprise and happiness. It's like, good for you, Mord.
Yeah. Well,
and the thing is, too, you know, Mord is sort of a bizarre character. In some ways, he's almost as simple as Hodor.
Right.
He's maybe a little bit meaner, but it's almost like it's not like actual malice. Like,
He's
as far as he's concerned, once Tyrion is officially free to go, that's it. Job done.
Yeah.
He doesn't care anymore. And so it's not like he would still hold him any ill will. When he comes in and he's hitting him with the club and all that, it's mostly just like, stop making noise. I have to sit here listening to you, so shut up.
And he looked to me, you know, kind of jumpy, like he was, you know, he's a little bit scared. So he swings at that and keeps people back, and he's probably used to people taking a swing
at him. People trying to hurt him.
The one thing that bugged me in the book, and I mean they did it exactly in the show, is you know, I'll give you gold if you help me, and then he realizes, all right, he's not going to like help me escape, but I'll give you gold to give a message to Lysa, which it's like, well, go tell her I'm going to confess. I don't see why that's something that you'd have to pay for.
Well, because he doesn't know how long they're planning to leave him there. Because if they're assuming that he's just never going to confess, then they're going to just keep him there essentially indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly at least until they can have someone else important come and say, hey, you guys can't really do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a Lannister. He knows he's got to tip people. Don't you know you're supposed to tip your jailer?
Yeah, but he's also got to go walk through the hill people, and he has no money now.
Well, he's got Bronn. But at the same time, though, he doesn't want to risk falling over the edge in his sleep while he waits for them to bring him to court.
That's a good point.
There was I get to bring up another Flash Gordon reference. I can't believe this. I'm so happy. the fight between Servardus and Bronn reminded me of the moon door open, with the scene with
the disc with
Flash and Gordon and James Bond, Timothy Dalton fighting on the disc with the spikes coming up at the bottom, and they could fall off the edge and fall millions of miles to their death. Made me think of that.
I've never watched that entire movie.
That'd be awesome, seeing Robert with a remote control.
I don't know, but now I've got the Queen song stuck in my head. Thanks a lot, PG.
Woo!
But before we leave that, I think Christiana should recite Tyrion's admission of guilt.
I don't think I can recite it. I certainly was a fan.
Yes.
Had any highlights for us?
Much better than the book.
Let me post it.
It's like
in the chat so that you can read it.
Bald man cry. Oh, you want me to actually read it?
I should.
All right then. It's like, when I was 12, I milked my eel into a pot of turtle stew. I flogged the one-eyed snake. I skinned my sausage. I made the bald man cry. Into the turtle stew, which I do believe my sister ate. At least I hope she did.
The best thing of that whole thing was when, after he says, I made the bald man cry, and just the motion he makes with his hand.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing that really made me just laugh the hardest watching the episode was the last bit where he's saying, and then I brought a honeycomb and a jackass into a brothel. And Lysa interrupts him, and little Robin goes, then what happened? Then,
he's telling the best story ever.
I also like the part where he's like, when I close my eyes, I can still see her tits bouncing.
I know. Well, and some great editing in that was showing us how Bronn is amused by all of that. And that starts to set up why we might believe that he would stand up for Tyrion. Because there's other reasons that, you know, that we could go into. I mean, essentially, he's a sellsword. That's what he does for a living, is risk his life in order to get paid.
Exactly.
So why wouldn't he? He knows Tyrion is rich. He thinks, yeah, I could take him. I could take this guy. Sure, why not?
Yeah,
but also the fact that he is amused by Tyrion certainly helps.
Yes. Bronn always reminded me in the books of my brother Tim. And seeing him on screen, he's not nearly as good looking as my brother Tim. But it's very funny, and I can't wait till we get the classic Bronn lines, because I know I'm still going to be seeing my brother right there.
So I think we've hit all of those scenes, but we have Sansa and Septa Mordain having their discussion, where she has one of the best lines that she has in the show, at least so far, and just made me laugh, was when she throws in the, you know, oh, where did you grow up or whatever, and she's like,
where are you from anyway, the north or the south?
I come from a very small village.
Oh, wait. I just realized I don't care.
That.
And that was, I was like, okay, finally she did something that didn't make me, you know, wretch. But then we have the Joffrey coming in, and I think I tweeted or I sent to Viv. I was just like, I really just want to put a spear through them both.
You did.
Yes. Even though it is probably the first scene where you actually get a feeling, you mentioned it, Nutty, where you get the feeling, well, you know, she would fall in love with Joffrey, you know, that he does have some charm. That's the only time I never bought that she would be stupid enough to buy that. But that was actually the first time where I'm like, well, plus the kid acted his ass off in that. I love his acting in that, even though I hate him.
Yeah. Well, I was, you know, I felt the same way, but at the same time, I was also kind of thinking, I'm impressed with Joffrey for being able to keep that up for a whole 3 minutes of however long this scene took.
I also, I felt like I could see the stars in Sansa's eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was great.
And now I'm getting lost with the order of events because, like I said, I only watched it once.
It's Roz and Theon on the road is next, I believe.
Yeah, I was trying to Nutty had thrown out about, you know, the revelation or figuring out, and that was later. No, I was just trying to figure out when that happened, but that was right near the end. But so yes, we have Roz, which you were talking about doing some sort of poll or something, Viv. But yeah, my theory is that there will be no. Well, this isn't really a spoiler. There's a character later on in the books named Shay.
Yes.
And I think there's not going to be a Shay, that Roz is going to be Shay.
I agree.
Thinking that might happen as well.
They're certainly just laying the groundwork
because like Viv just said, they've laid the groundwork of her leaving, going on the same road that Tyrion would obviously be on soon. It makes sense to me. But anyway, so that was one thing I saw.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, sort of my initial thought is that I feel like the way they're characterizing Roz doesn't really seem to completely match with what I have in my head for Shay, but I could definitely see how they could do that.
I think it's entirely likely, and at this point I'll be surprised if they don't do that, have her be in place of Shay.
One less actress to pay.
It's certainly true that they're making Roz a much bigger character in the show than she was in the book, and unless they have something planned like that, it's not clear why they were doing that. I mean, she is a convenient character in the sense that, like, you know, there's been a couple of different characters so far that, you know, had the opportunity to talk about their motivations because they're with a prostitute. Theon and Tyrion at the beginning.
Yep.
Right. And the only other reason to have her have that scene would be to play off how Theon acts. And so if he's, you know, if she's there for to leave to make Theon go, "Oh, why are you going?" and say the things that he was saying. And the throwing of the coin, which I assume would probably be the coin that Tyrion gave him earlier.
He flips it to her the same way that Tyrion flips it to him.
One more look, please.
And I will say again, you know, like, no spoilers, but Roz does, we do see more from her in the next episode.
We saw a lot of her in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I stand by exactly the wording that I used.
All right, PG, get in your car.
What's her name again? You told me.
Esme.
Esme.
Something with a D, I think.
That's all I got in there.
Esme. A D cup. Oh. That was rude.
One thing, we did mention the scene earlier with Ned on the Iron Throne and talking about Gregor burning the lands and killing the people. One thing I didn't like about the scene was Peter Baelish.
And, so obvious.
You know, either they're just like saying, okay, well, he's trying to push Ned's buttons, but it was almost like, okay, I'm the expository town crier. Tully, that's your wife's house, isn't it? The fish on the ground. That means something, you know. Isn't the mountain called Lord Tywin's Mad Dog? I didn't understand, other than pushing Ned's buttons, why they had to make quite that. You know, people saw this stuff in the last episode with, you know, who Gregor was. It wasn't needed in that sort of respect.
Yeah, the cutting the
that
head off
sounds
the horse
like someone cutting a horse in half. Oh, that sounds like somebody we know.
I think the fish thing someone had to explain that because, you know, there's no way anyone would know that otherwise.
Well,
the fish thing wouldn't make any sense unless somebody pointed it out.
Yes. The first line where he says, you know, oh, that's the Tully sigil. But the way he leans over and he's like, Tully, that's your wife's house. You grew up with the Tullys. You didn't have to say it like that. Like, I didn't know it was the Tully was the fish. You know, it's like just the way they presented it was sort of weird, I thought. Mm.
Well, as far as Littlefinger pushing Ned's buttons, though, I think Peter has the right impression of Ned that it's like, if I'm going to manipulate this guy, I can't be subtle. I need to not just push these buttons. I need to kind of like really grind them down with my elbow.
I can
Starks.
That does make sense.
He said it earlier, Starks, quick of temper, slow of wit. So, you know, maybe he does have to draw everything out for him.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He really does.
He really does.
I just felt it made Peter's intentions kind of obvious.
Yes. And then just to finish out the scenes and we can talk about whatever else, we have Ned, Sansa, and Arya talking about getting them out of town. And I loved Arya's reactions to her sister the entire time, especially the seven hells, which I thought, you know, it's just hilarious.
That was awesome.
As Nutty mentioned earlier, the revelation that it took Sansa, one of the, let's just say, you know, she's not dumb, but just not the way she was represented in the books, especially, you know, her being the one to turn on Ned's light. Maybe Peter should have been standing in the background saying, blonde haired children.
But, yeah, that was lame.
Yeah.
I think that was for, you know, lowest common denominator America.
Well, the weird thing is, I mean, that's how it all played out in the book. It took that long to figure out what must have, I mean, for Ned to figure it out. I mean, I talked to my mom. She watched the very first episode, had not read the books, and she asked me, what about the Queen's children? They all look like her. And we saw her with Jamie. Does that mean that they're not really Robert's children?
Nice.
And that was the first episode from someone who had not read the books. And so, but at the same time, it's that way in the book too. For whatever reason, I think he felt the need to really draw out the mystery, even when I know I guessed it early. And it's one thing for Ned to say he needs proof of some kind. Mm-hmm. It's another thing for him to not even get the idea until this point. You know what I mean?
I think also Ned never would have expected that Jaime and Cersei were sleeping together because they're brother and sister. You know, as we've said before, he's an honorable person, so he doesn't expect people to do dishonorable things. The idea of him being with Lyanna would be totally gross and foreign to him. He would never assume that Cersei and Jaime would be together. So while the kids look like them, he wouldn't jump to the conclusion, oh, you must be fucking your brother.
Well, he wouldn't have to jump to the conclusion that it was Jaime to assume that Robert was not the father.
Mm. Yeah. And
so, I don't know. But,
you know, he's a little slow sometimes.
This actually jumps back to what we were saying earlier with Ned and Robert talking in the chambers, and why doesn't he just come out and say it? Well, I guess, you know, he hadn't connected the dots yet, so he wouldn't have said anything. He had suspicions, but didn't have the full picture. So I guess that's why he wouldn't have said anything.
Yeah. Two things there. One being that, the one, again, watching with my friend Matt, even though he hadn't made the connections, Ned made the connections yet, there was no reason for him not to say, well, we found this knife that belonged to Tyrion, and we think that, you know, Tyrion was somehow involved, whether he was directly involved. There's a Lannister thing, and Jon Arryn was, you know, that was the time to say all that stuff. Yeah. And he's like, well, why didn't he just tell him all the stuff that he at least suspects?
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing is, he had the my friend Matt had the same revelation, or you know, the same epiphany about everything when Ned did. He's like, oh, that's why the blonde and the why he keeps looking for, at the bastards and blah blah blah. You know, so he didn't get it until that point. So, you know, it did work for people. Some people you know, that hadn't read the books, but I think we mentioned early on, or I mentioned one of the earlier episodes, just sort of the way they presented some of the stuff. And some of the way the lines were delivered, it sort of did seem like you were getting beat over the head with it, but it did work for a lot of people, I'm sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
Can I just say something? I sure. don't want someone honorable, decent, and good and strong. I want Joffrey.
And Arya laughs at that too.
Yeah.
The look on Arya's face then is priceless.
The look that she and Ned shared was priceless.
I'm supposed to marry Prince Joffrey. I love him. And I'm meant to be his queen and have his babies.
Seven hells.
Mm-hmm. I think that's my favorite line from the whole episode.
I mean, it's not I made the bald man cry.
No. Sorry, I like that, but
brown chicken, no cow.
I think my favorite line was Bronn saying, you know, he's like, no, I didn't fight with honor. He did.
Oh, I thought it was Mord Gold.
Well, that was good too. Now go.
Now go.
Well, if we're listing favorite lines, my favorite is the, and there is only one thing we say to death, not today.
Not today.
That was good too. There's a lot of good lines in this episode.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much all the scenes. Did anybody have any other?
Well, I mean, the last scene comments? That we end on is the scene with Khal and Viserys and Daenerys in the tent.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which was awesome.
Which we already talked about.
Yeah. I do have to say that, like, that scene, it felt a lot more visceral in the show than it did for me in the book. In the book, I was saying, ha ha, good riddance, that jerk. But in the show, I mean, obviously, this guy's dangerous, and I understand sort of the need for him to be gotten rid of.
Yeah.
And there's the whole justification of, you know, they can't shed blood in their sacred city, so they had to have some other way to kill him. And then there's the whole irony aspect of it. But dude.
That's harsh.
Grand fucking.
Well, they are Dothraki. But yeah, I agree. It was like, I liken it to when I read Pet Sematary versus when I watched the movie. I was fine reading it, but watching it freaked my shit. And I had to leave the theater. I couldn't watch it.
Great expression.
And so it was like that. It was like even my imagination of what I was reading on the page in no way touched how disgusting and gruesome it was when they, and how quickly does gold melt? That was crazy fast, I thought.
But, well, I think there was a little bit of, you super know, heating.
Plutonium heating that fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, and it was, and
it cooled pretty fast too for it to clank when he hits the ground.
I was just going to ask if anybody else heard that clank.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend of mine who was really scared about seeing this scene because when she read it in the book, it grossed her out so much that she said she was going to close her eyes during the scene.
She needs to.
And then when we discussed it last night, she said, actually, I had no problem with the scene.
Huh.
And it wasn't nearly as disturbing as when I read it.
Well, she needs to be writing some horror books.
She is writing horror books.
Good. Wow. You know, that kind of imagination.
Well, I think that pretty much covered everything that we wanted to talk about the episode.
So for the survey, we sadly had no submission by Christiana. She was all caught up in the episode, so she didn't make a submission.
Yeah,
so.
I forgot.
So she very honorably forfeits because an Ellis never lies.
That's right.
And then I'm going in order of when I received them. My submission was 3 deaths and Drogo speaks once. Nutty had 6 deaths and Drogo speaks once. PG had 1,000 deaths and Drogo speaks 6 times. Tooch had 10 deaths and Drogo speaks once. And my death count was a total of 5. We had 3 wildlings in the attack against Bran. Rob killed 2 and Theon killed 1. And then we had, what was his name in the Eyrie?
Ser Vardis.
Ser Vardis. And then, of course, Viserys went out, you know, just big time. So that was my count of 5. And Khal Drogo spoke 1 time. He had 1 scene where he spoke. And
was there only 1 time?
Yeah, that was the only time he said anything. The thing was not grunting, but...
Yeah, and I don't know if people had seen it or not on the survey. At the bottom, I had put in a little definition.
For deaths and for...
And it said, for things such as Khal Drogo speaking, we'd only count 1 per scene.
Yeah.
1 occurrence per scene.
Not each, like, sentence.
So I had written, you know, he could give a Shakespearean soliloquy, it would still count as 1.
Right. And I think next time, and we already talked about it, that needs to go where the survey move question it up top, is. Yeah, to make sure everybody sees that. So actually the only person that had, I win because I had 3 deaths and Drogo spoke once. Everybody else went over like PG with the 1,000 deaths in 6 years.
I'm going to get there eventually. Maybe next week.
Honey, I'm not one counting. Over. I'm telling you, I'm not that counting 1,000 corpses. We also had...
do need to rethink this, though, because, again, the Dothraki army is 10.
Right.
And look at all the...
But they're fierce.
If you use the math, then it would be 12 deaths in an episode as opposed to 1,000, mm-hmm. based on what we saw at the tourney and mm-hmm. the Dothraki horde and whatnot. But of the 3 listeners that submitted for the survey, we actually do have another winner.
Yay!
Ian Koenig made the same guess that I did, which was 3 deaths, and Drogo will speak once. So he wins. PG.
$25 gift certificate from Amazon.
What?
Nice.
Congratulations. Congratulations, Ian.
So who was that again? Ian?
K-O-E-N-I-G.
Very nice.
Now, we will not be doing a survey for episode 7 because some people... have already seen it.
Cheaters.
Not necessarily HBO Christiana, but didn't want to do a contest and give out a gift certificate when somebody could have seen the episode.
And I did post
but
that.
But actually, I think we should do just one between the 4 of us, and I think Christiana should come up with the survey based on something she's seen.
Nice.
Wait, so just because you guys haven't seen it yet, so no. I should pick something for you to guess.
Yes, mm-hmm. So not...
I've seen it? Okay.
Not deaths, not Drogo talking, so if you can come up with anything else. And I think Cheech and Viv had the notes in the Google Doc that had some cool ones that I don't know if any of them would apply or give you an idea, but you don't have to be put on the spot. You can ask, you know, tell us, you have to tell them because you guys are going to watch it later tonight.
I don't want to put her on the spot either. So if you don't come up with them, then gosh, I guess we'll just have to get some sleep.
Well,
tonight.
How about one can be important handwritten messages.
Ooh. You want to count? Okay. You want a count of important handwritten messages?
Yeah.
Okay.
So including ravens and other things, or just ravens?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So a handwritten message meaning, you know, you will see a physical item as opposed to just someone heard about something.
Okay.
Okay. And option number 2?
Let me think. Got to come up with something good, right? nipples.
Oh, the nipple count, finally.
So that's rock individual on. Nipples.
Yes, that's right. Male or female?
7.
Well, actually, let's take that back. I take just female in this context because, you know, with the Dothraki, like all those guys.
Yeah.
It's hard to count.
Okay, so female individual nipples. Is it a nipple in a scene or every time we see the nipple in the scene counts?
Oh, I think it would be, you know, each character, if their nipples are showing, it's only once per scene.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once per scene.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
And that's what we started formulating in the document.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on.
So my guess is 2 messages, 6 nipples.
Oh, damn. We're doing it right now. Guessing. Okay. Hold on.
Oh, we're doing it on the thing. Okay.
Nutties. Well, because they're going to watch it tonight, so I figured get it in now. Yeah.
Six messages. How many nipples? What did you say, Nettie?
She said 2 messages.
Oh, no, it's 2 messages, 6 nipples.
6 nipples, 2 messages.
Oh, this is Price is Right. I'm going last, motherfucker.
$1, Bob.
$1.
I was going to say, that's what I don't like about this.
No, I already have mine, so I'm going to say.
Okay, PG, you go next.
I'm going to say 4 messages.
1,000 nipples.
No. I'm going 9. I think we're going to get a profile view and only get 1 nipple once. So I'm going 9 nipples.
9 nipples.
Correct. Side boob.
So that means
we're
9.
Going side boob.
We see 9.
We're going Sarah Michelle Gellar side boob with the block.
Anyway. Well, then you don't see the nipple.
Well, just one. The other one's side view.
I am going to say, not looking at the paper and what I've written down, I'm going to say 3 messages and 15 nipples.
Right.
Wow.
What did I say? 3 messages and 15 mm-hmm. nipples. I really wasn't listening. Okay, Chooch?
I'm going to go for 2 and 2.
2 and 2. Okay. Your votes are recorded.
I should point out that I don't, off the top of my head, know the exact count.
I know. I'm the counter. I'm the royal counter.
I'm happy to do the stop motion photography
for the nipples.
Figure out the nipples.
And I guess you'll leave me with counting messages.
No. Yeah, you should have gone ahead and gone with 1,000 nipples. No, I'm kidding.
Woohoo! Caligula.
Woohoo! Yeah, about that. Okay, so time for feedback.
Feedback. Before we do feedback, if it's not exactly feedback, but there is a tweet that I would like to share from Lady Arya Stark. She tweets while she watches the episode, so I generally go back and I read her tweets throughout, and it cracks me up. And my favorite was, "Horse's heart raw is the sushi of the Dothraki."
Nice.
So it doesn't destroy the space-time continuum when she's watching herself?
Oh, it totally bends it. She must be watching from the TARDIS or something.
Land sushi.
So, end scene.
And Roz wrote off on the... Never mind.
I had a couple tweets from Skip and Sensi.
Our winner from last week's
survey. Yeah. So he had said, first up, he had said, not having read much of the book, is Daenerys' tolerance for great heat just mental conditioning, or is this a part of the dragon? Ooh. And then reason I asked, Dany grew up hearing stories of the Targaryens. Is she using this as part of her growth, or is there something else? To which Bran G immediately replied, don't answer, it's part of the fun, with a winky. And then Skip replies to both of us, oh, and I forgot, no spoilers.
Oh, take a drink.
Well, I think that the answer to that question, it's the incest that causes that. So anyway, the brother or sister marriages.
Martin genetics.
Wait a minute, say that again, PG.
Brother, sister, genetics, what?
Oh, I thought you said brother is something else. Never mind. The sin, it burns. No, never mind.
So actually what we discover is that Daenerys not being burned is an elaborate plot by aliens to fool her, and it's all just a trick. You know, at some point later, she gets burned by something and everyone laughs.
Yes, it's a nemesis plot.
And Darth Vader is her father. Yep. Sorry. You'll have to cut that out, PG.
Yeah.
That's one hell of a spoiler.
Everybody get drunk.
Was there any other feedback that you guys got? Answer the question. No.
Let us.
Did anybody else have any feedback?
You didn't stop. You just like talked in a circle there.
I did. I'll cut it.
You don't even need us.
No.
We're not editing, PG.
Oh, I'm going to edit that.
You motherfucker.
Of course. Motherfucker, I ain't going to edit that.
Okay, we have feedback. Just, are you going to do it,
I just
Cheech?
Felt like, oh, God.
Yes.
I will, yeah.
Wait, okay, what'd you say, PG? We were talking.
No, I couldn't remember the actor's name. I just felt like, who's the one in The Usual Suspects that
Kevin just, Spacey.
You can't understand a word he says, The Usual Suspects.
Benicio del Toro.
Yes.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Like, motherfucker.
Flippy for real.
All right.
Okay, so
yeah, there was emailed feedback.
Okay, do that next.
Yes, do that next.
Who has that?
Cheech has it.
From our buddy Pat.
Yes.
Pat Man.
What did he say? Sir Podrick? Sir Podrick? What did he say last week? Sir Podrick?
Something like that. All right, so he wrote, "Hey, gang. This morning's commute got me halfway through the BTW podcast for the fourth aired episode, Bastard Cripples and Broken Things. I hate to be that guy, but I wanted to email in a correction. Yes, I'll leave it as a comment on the webpage, and I'll try to be gentle. PG wanted to give some backstory context on the Greyjoy Rebellion for people unfamiliar to the books, and he said that Balon Greyjoy was rebelling against the Starks. If I can throw out a bad analogy, because all analogies are bad, that's like saying the American Revolution was about the colonies rebelling against Canada. Balon Greyjoy was rebelling against King Robert. Balon had declared himself King of the Iron Isles, which has its own major cultural elements distinct from that of Westeros. This is important because it influences Theon's dad's behavior later on." Mm. And then he had a follow-up. "It's all good. I do apologize for being..." Insert comic book guy tone. "Well, actually, it was a rebellion against the Baratheons, blah, blah, blah." Yeah.
But well, I figured... first of all, fuck you, Pat. No.
Hey.
I'm kidding.
He's my friend.
That's fair.
Is he coming to Baltimore, by the way?
He's yes, he is. Yes.
So you can say fuck you to his face, and I'm just going to stand back.
I got to back that. If I had been on that episode, I would have said something.
Oh, thank you.
I'll hold PG back. You start swinging.
No, I did get it wrong, but I also said that they attacked the Starks because that was the closest place they could get to. And I could be wrong about that too, but that was like why.
Just keep digging. Yeah. So he said, you know, sorry for being that guy, but I figured you might as well get the input from a bud. Thumbs up on holding out on reading book two to me until after the second season. Should you hold to that course of madness? In my mind, it's no less difficult than holding to the Night's Watch oath.
Yeah.
I look forward to season two of the podcast where we get the Cheech perspective. And so I'm looking forward to part two of this podcast.
I don't know what that meant.
Oh, I guess.
Yeah, because he only the first half of the card.
Oh, right.
The second half on his way home from work.
I'm sorry.
Oh, and props to Viv on her hallelujah rant in regards to Sansa and her lack of strength of character. If that makes sense, how I've written it.
I busted out laughing on my run when I heard that. I was like, oh, he really put it in there.
That was great. That was really great. Cheech, as to you holding off on reading the books.
Yeah.
My friend wanted me to tell you that if you do that, she's really looking forward to that aspect of the podcast, but she doesn't think that she'd be able to do it. And if it is like joining the Night's Watch, does that mean you get to go to Molestown and dig for buried treasure?
Thus concludes our feedback.
Can we actually have one more? We had a voicemail, our Yay. First voicemail.
Sweet.
Yay. From that son of a bitch, Pat. So,
Hey, people, this is Pat DeMiro calling about episode 6. I wanted to point out that I really enjoyed that the moon door was put into the floor of the area instead of along the wall.
Yeah.
Because once the artist is killed by Bronn, it was awesome when he was tossed out through the moon door to fall. And, of course, in the books, Vardis lay where he died, but... it was so good to see a body fall off the area. It was kind of weird for Bronn to, like, you know, kill him, pick him up, carry him to the open door, and toss him out the side. So having him there on the floor, rolling him into the hole, excellent.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that production change, and then I'll call again sometime soon. Bye.
Yay. way.
I agree completely. It's much scarier in the floor, if a bit less architecturally plausible.
Right. Absolutely.
But I liked it.
Thank you, Pat. Yes.
Me too.
Yes, thank you, Pat. Looking forward to seeing you at Balticon. Or I really enjoyed seeing you at Balticon whenever this is released.
Yeah, thanks for calling, son of a bitch. And
don't call him that in front of his wife and daughter, okay? Well, at least not in front of his daughter.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that in front of his daughter.
Okay.
I'm just going to lean over and say, I'm going to catch you. No. I'm in a mood. Anyway.
Nobilis is very tall.
That's
He's
great.
Also yes. geeky, and he does a podcast called Nobilis Erotica.
And here's the message that he left 4 days ago.
Hey, guys. This is Nobilis Reed calling into the Beyond the Wall podcast the way I was invited to in episode 4. Thank you very much. You asked whether our favorite Khaleesi there, whether her character arc of her growth was seemed a little quick to someone who hadn't read the books. And to me, actually, it did not seem too quick. I think the pacing of it, the fact that time passes in between scenes, I've kind of gotten used to it. And no, it didn't feel too fast. It didn't feel too unexplained. Same thing applies to some of the other things you talk about, like being at the Crossroads Inn and other things like that. I'm not feeling like things are disjointed or unconnected. And I get a proper sense of scale, I think, for the events as they're progressing. So I think your fears about how the show is perceived by people who have not read the books probably misplaced. Either that or I'm just an unusual person. Or both. So that's my opinion. And look forward to the next one.
Yes, our first two calls on our voice line, which you will hear in the next few seconds on our outro. And
are we done?
We're not done.
Jeez, Chooch. You're not ready to finish.
If you need to go to bed, Chooch, you feel free.
I got a show to watch.
You son of a bitch. Okay, we had an email from Tim Dodge.
Oh, cool.
Friend Tim, who I don't know if he's coming to Balticon.
Yes,
he is. Okay, so we have another. This is the Balticon Beyond the Wall podcast and his thoughts about episode 6. And he has a very interesting question, which I wish I could have a yes answer to. Love the Arya Sirio scene. I really did not expect, I was sort of surprised that he wrote this. I really did not expect them to actually show the crowning. I thought they would show Drogo tipping the pot and have Viserys scream. And my only response to that, Tim, is have you watched the first 5 episodes? With
this
the
is
blood
the,
gushing and the, they haven't held back. So it was very interesting to see that. And I had my hands around my eyes like I was going to have to close them, but I did not watch it. So
for me, once I saw that they let the 8-year-old breastfeed and they showed it, I was like, yeah, they're going to show everything.
Yeah.
And then he asked a question, which actually I heard from another person. While I realized it was scalding hot gold being poured on him, I wonder if it would really kill him within seconds. And we were discussing this earlier. I don't know if it was before we started or during the show, where I was like, if it was that hot, it probably like went right into his brain, not just stopping on his skull. So, I would think that it would be pretty pretty quick. So,
we talked about that right at the beginning.
Yes.
And I think also shock plays into it. I think even if his heart hadn't stopped beating, his body would have shut down just to the intense pain. There's so many nerve endings and blood vessels in your head.
Yep.
Well, and literally just the heat would literally cook the brain. I mean, it's heat stroke, but just immediate.
Yeah. No time to hydrate.
But we know carbonite works, and that's cold. So.
And it makes a big chocolate Han Solo.
And then Tim wrote, the way the actress spoke Danny's last line was chilling. And as usual, Tyrion stole the show, especially with his confession. And then he asked the question, will there be a special Beyond the Wall event at Balticon? And if we had thought ahead of time and had actually started, well, if we had started the podcast like in, you know, February, then I'm sure we would have, we should have done that. But
I have a thought, but we'll talk about it offline.
We'll definitely have a bar meetup.
I will send an email. It's not going to be anything that you can record and sneak out into the world, PG. I know how you are.
I'm just going to say I'm going to be at the bar a lot. And
oh, yes. Well, of course.
I told everyone on Twitter that I've made lemon cakes. So if you find me, you might be able to get yourself a lemon cake unless they've all been eaten. You guys, of course, get your own. Yeah, there's some reserved just for the Beyond the Wall podcast crew.
Yes.
Plus I'll be seeing you guys on Thursday night.
Thank you. Yes, to our very exclusive locked door Beyond the Wall members only secret handshake viewing party.
Yes, if you come dressed as one of the characters, actually only if you come dressed as Roz, you can get into the room.
Or as undressed as Roz. Don't put that out there because you know there's going to be some redheaded man come knocking on the door.
Oh, good God.
Do we know any redheaded men?
I just got like this image of one of my old gamer friends from like Dungeons and Dragons. He's got long red hair or long red beard, and now I'm picturing him naked. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. You know what, you guys? I need to go to bed. So
and dream of long red-haired, red-bearded men.
Well, on that note, we'd like to thank everybody for listening to the Beyond the Wall podcast. We do appreciate it. Our first two calls.
I know. It's so cool.
Again, we will be at Balticon outside of Baltimore, Maryland this weekend. And we were last out before that. And then, what was that?
I said, or last weekend.
Or last weekend, if you're getting this after. Yeah. So Memorial weekend, depending on when that falls and in the space-time continuum. Either it's last week or this week.
Been going to be at Baltimore.
Well said.
Yes.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Yes. But again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bing.
If you'd like to send feedback to Beyond the Wall, you can email us at btw@specficmedia.com. That's btw@specficmedia.com. Or you can send us a voicemail at 704-315-5884. Or you can comment on the web. Go to specficmedia.com, and there you'll find a shiny little button to click on that'll take you right to our page. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported License. Feel free to share and remix. Just give us credit and don't charge money for it.
While at BaltCon, we had one of our low-key affairs the first night and stayed up till dawn, but that's neither here nor there. What was important is that I had a phone call from one of my former hallmates at DragonCon, and I didn't even know that he was at Balticon, but he called in, and I wanted to play him for you. Hope you recognize him.
Could you sons of bitches keep it down over there? I'm trying to write the next Spider-Man or something. Maybe some more Stripperella. I'm trying to get some sleep. All right, true believers. I'm 193 years old, and I need my rest.
Christian Herron, who plays Hodor.
Luna, quiet. Sorry about that, you guys.
Direwolf on attack. So
it's those neighbor dogs. They're always causing trouble.
Well, she's got to keep them in line. Yeah, so
they're worse than Lannisters.
When I was 7, I saw a servant girl bathing in the river.
you know, how Google Voice does the
transcription.
Auto-translate.
Which, you know, is horrible.
Mm.
Yeah, it thinks Nuke Chess is Jeff.
By the way, PG, it can never translate you.
Me?
Yeah, message undecipherable. Or whatever it says. I always, yeah.
Apparently they still need to program it for Hobo.
I stole her robe. She was forced to return to the castle, naked and in tears.
This is the most still that I've been all day.
Are you here?
Oh, there I answered that here. Call too.
I'm on camera again. Fucking.
I don't see you on camera.
You're fucking on camera.
Microsoft's already fucked it up. It's only been a day.
Why is my camera going on my screen, but I don't have the little camera thing to turn it off? What is wrong with you? Can I turn you off? Can I shut you down?
If I close my eyes, I can still see her tits bouncing.
I love her. What the hell is Kaylee farting again? You changed that dog's diet. Did you hold the camera up to Kaylee's bottom? Camera, microphone.
That was pretty loud.
When I was 10, I stuffed my uncle's boots with goat shit. When confronted with my crime, I blamed a squire. Poor boy was flogged. And
I've got video going on my end, and even though you don't see it, I don't.
You don't want to see yourself.
It scares me.
When I was 12, I milked my eel into a pot of turtle stew.
And if, you know, Chooch and Viv are tag teaming that with me, then we can have fun in the hotel room. Oh, I'm sorry, I got off topic.
I flogged the one-eyed snake. I skinned my sausage.
Totally.
Do what?
Said Viv can use her sexy Viv voice.
I don't think I have a sexy voice, PG. I don't know what you mean. See, that's what they tell me is my sexy voice. To me, it just sounds like I can't catch my breath.
I made the bald man cry into the turtle stew.
The post-coital sexy voice. Can't catch your breath.
Gotcha.
I don't think Roz ever has that breathless voice.
Because she never comes.
She's a bit of
she's a professional.
Which I do believe my sister ate. At least I hope she did.
I know he'll be able to keep that promise because he has great stamina.
Ooh. Ooh. Yes. Thor's hammer.
I once brought a jackass and a honeycomb into a brothel.
Silence! What happened next?
Transport!
What? Don't move! Stay where you are!
Long live Flash! You've saved your life. Have a nice day.
Yeah!